Okay, I want to welcome those of you who are listening to our podcast. We are at lesson number 8 in our series entitled Between the Testaments, or Mind the Gap, as we are looking at the time period, or the gap, between the close of the Old Testament in 400 BC and the opening of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in 4 BC at the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Tonight we come to part 2 of our study on the Hasmonean dynasty. And you have an outline in front of you, but once again, I'm going to ask, just use it as a resource. You can glance at it. It'll kind of keep you in line with where I'm going. But the best way to listen this evening is to pay attention to what I'm saying and to the slides that are behind me. And for Debbie, who is new tonight in the room, and for others of you who are listening online, we are going to have a quick review. Rochelle, would you do me a favor? It looks like that I'm about to run out of batteries on my remote, and these are AAA batteries, and the office should have some, and if they run out, we'll be able to replace them. Very quickly, I asked my wife before we came in, sweetheart, when I give you the dates of the empires that ruled the world, do you remember them? She said, no. I can't remember dates. I said, well, when was I born? And she said, well, that's different. That's a special date. Well, I get it. On the screen behind me, you have the 5 world empires from the creation of the world to the coming of Christ with the dates beside them. These are difficult to remember. But if you forget the dates, just remember the countries. Because in the 10th century BC, 1,000 years before the coming of Christ, for the first time, the world had a country that conquered other countries and then left rulers over them and extracted taxes from the people. That is an empire. The Assyrians were the first, from 911 to 609. Then the Babylonians came. We've talked about them. After the Babylonians, the Persians. After the Persians, the Greeks. And after the Greeks, the Roman Empire. And Rome ruled the world when Jesus Christ was born. We've been studying the empire of the Greeks. Alexander the Great, who in his wrath toward the Persians, who had destroyed Athens, leveled it to the ground. Alexander the Great went with his army to Persia and conquered the Persian Empire. We have been looking on the maps that I've been showing you at how Alexander, when he conquered the known world, what he did was, shortly thereafter, at the age of 32, he died. And when he died, he had no heir. So his kingdom was divided among 4 generals. And this is where many Christians get lost, and sadly, they get lost because in order to understand the book of Daniel, you've got to recognize that the empire of Alexander was divided among his 4 generals. And then eventually, 2 of those generals, Seleucus and Ptolemy, ended up fighting each other for control of the world. The Seleucid kingdom was the vast majority of the Greek kingdom that Alexander conquered when he conquered the Persian Empire. And remember, Persia today is what we would call Iran or Iraq. He conquered them, and the Seleucid kingdom covered most of that territory, as you see on this map. General Ptolemy received the richest 1/4 of Alexander's empire, and that was North Africa, what we would call Egypt. And these 2 kingdoms, which predominated the world, in the 4th century, the late 4th century, the Seleucid kingdom and the Ptolemaic kingdom ended up going to war against each other. And in the book of Daniel, the Seleucid kingdom is called the Northern Kingdom in Daniel 11, and the Southern kingdom is the Ptolemaic kingdom. They fight each other back and forth for control. And right smack dab in the middle is Judea, the Jews who'd been released by the Babylonians, and released by the Persians, King Cyrus, in 538 BC, in the Cyrus decree, they go back to Judea, which was a province, a very small province, as I'll show you in just a moment, under Persian rule, and then under Greek rule. And back and forth, the Seleucids and the Ptolemies fight each other, and Jerusalem and the little kingdom of Judea, or the little province of Judea, is dominated by the Greeks. And I have shown you how the Greeks were polytheists. They worshiped the Olympic gods on Mount Olympus, including the head god Zeus and the other 11 that are listed on the screen. And because of that, when the Greeks ruled Jerusalem, the Seleucids eventually dominated the Ptolemies. And one of the Seleucid kings, a very wicked man by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes, reigned from 175 to 164, and he came to Jerusalem really upset with the Jews because he felt like that they were not giving allegiance to the Greek gods. And remember, his name, Epiphanes, means God made manifest. And he felt like the Jews were not worshiping him as a god. And so he came to Jerusalem and he forbade the Jews the rite of circumcision, the study of the Torah, and the keeping of the Jewish dietary laws. And he said, if you violate this, you circumcise your boys, I will kill you. If you refuse to eat pork, I will kill you. If you study the Torah, I will kill you. And that's exactly what he did. And in addition to that, he set up a statue of Zeus in the temple in Jerusalem in December of 167 BC. It's called the Abomination of Desolation in Daniel chapter 11. Daniel foretold that it would happen. And in Daniel chapter 11, when the Abomination of Desolation occurs, in time, in December of 167 BC, there are some priests that are living in Judea who revolt. Under the leadership of a man by the name of Mattathias. Remember, I told you the story last week. We're still reviewing. Mattathias lived in a little city called Modiin outside of Jerusalem. And when the Greeks came to his city, he was a Levite priest, a Jewish priest. When they came to his city and ordered another priest, a friend of his, to sacrifice a pig and offer the blood to Zeus, Mattathias, the priest, killed his friend. And then he turned his sword on the Greek official and killed him. And this is the beginning of what is called the Maccabean Revolt. And it's called the Maccabean Revolt because Mattathias was like a hammer, including his five sons. They were like a hammer. And Maccabee in Hebrew means hammer. After he killed these two men in 1 Maccabees, which is in the Apocrypha, chapter 2, verse 27, it is said that Mattathias cried out, "Let everyone who has a zeal for the law of God and who stands for the covenant of God follow me." This occurred in December of 167 BC, the very time that the statue of Zeus was put in the temple in Jerusalem. Okay? And of course, I've said before, and I'll say it again, in Exodus chapter, I think it's 15, verse 11. There's a typo. Maccabee is an acrostic for the phrase, "Who is like you among the heavenly gods, Lord?" Who is like you among the Olympic gods, Lord? Maccabee! And when the Maccabees began to fight the Greeks, they would quote this great Maccabean anthem. "Who is like you among the heavenly gods, Yahweh?" And this is the beginning of what is called the Maccabean Revolt. Mattathias had five sons: John, Simon, Judas, Eleazar, Jonathan. We talked about them last week. Shortly after the revolt began, Mattathias died. So his son, Judas Maccabeus, took over. And it is Judas Maccabeus who fights the Greeks on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem and defeats them and kicks them out of the temple, tears down the statue of Zeus, rededicates the temple to Yahweh. And this occasion, December 164 BC, is the beginning of what we know as Hanukkah. Hanukkah in Hebrew means dedication. And what Judas Maccabeus did was he rededicated the temple to Yahweh. And the great story, it's called the Festival of Lights, because there was one little thing of oil, and only one, that they thought would maybe light the candelabra in the temple for a day. But it lasted for 8 days. So Jews today celebrate the cleansing of the temple and the restoration of their religion and the overthrow of the Greeks through Hanukkah. And in the New Testament, Hanukkah is mentioned. The Feast of Dedication is mentioned. Jesus himself was in Jerusalem in John 10 during the Feast of Dedication. You won't read about the Feast of Dedication or Hanukkah in the Old Testament because it's not there. This occurs in the time gap between the Testaments. And tonight, we are going to finish our look at the Hasmonean rulers who led Judea between the Testaments. And there are some colorful stories from these 12 main Hasmoneans. You say, now wait a minute, is it Hasmonean or is it Maccabee? Remember, Hasmonean was the name of a forefather of Mattathias. And so this is called the Hasmonean dynasty. It'd be like the Burleson dynasty, which is my last name. Maccabee was an acrostic, and it meant hammer. It was a description of the Hasmoneans. And so in the Hasmonean reign, it lasted 130 years from Mattathias killing those two in Modiin, the Greek official and the Jewish priest, in December of 167, until 37 BC, 130 years. Now, it's during this time period that you have the rise of the man you know as King Herod. And tonight, we're going to get into that. But let me just briefly show you part one of what we looked at last week. I've already mentioned Mattathias. He's the founder of the Maccabean Revolt. His son, Judas Maccabeus, Judas the Hammer, he is known for overtaking the temple in December 164, Hanukkah. So when you say to someone, Happy Hanukkah, to a Jew, Happy Hanukkah, remember, it is not their Christmas. It is in no form or fashion the light of the world coming to this world. Oh, no. It is a brutal, bloody battle to cleanse the Jewish temple. And to be candid with you, what's going to be happening right now in northern Syria with the Kurdish people, it's very similar to what happened to the Jews under the Greeks. The Greeks wanted to do away with them as a people, and the Turks want to do away with the Kurds as a people. And history begins even today for the Kurdish people. That's what happened in 164 BC to the Jews. It was a fight for their existence. And they won. Judas Maccabeus is the Jew that makes the first contact with a new world order called the Romans. And when we gather again in 2 weeks, next week we will have fall break, so there'll be no meeting. But in 2 weeks I will show you the rise of the Roman Republic, where they came from. And what's particularly fascinating is when the United States began as a country, all the principles of our founding fathers were based not upon Greece and the democracy of Greece, but they were based upon Rome and the Roman Republic. And so it's important for you to know where the Romans came from, because when Jesus is born, the Romans rule the world. And we'll be talking about how they get to that place when we come back together. But the first contact between the Jews and the Romans occurs with Judas Maccabeus sending a delegation, which you can read about in 1 Maccabees chapter 8. By the way, Jenny Rivers told me, if you don't have the Apocrypha and you have a phone and you have what's called the YouVersion, which was put out by Life Church. In fact, several of our friends at Life Church are responsible for the most downloaded biblical app in the history of the world. You can find the Apocrypha. What's the translation? It's the CEB translation. You have to go to the top and ask for CEB, and the Apocrypha is there on your phone, which is a great way to say it. Yeah, at the end of the New Testament. So it's not between the Testaments. Janie says the CEB has it at the end of the New Testament. And so you can read about that contract with the Romans. After Judas Maccabeus died, Jonathan Apphus, the diplomat, his brother, comes to the throne from 160 to 143. Now, Jonathan is known. He's the son of Mattathias, the brother of Judas Maccabeus. He is known because for the first time, a Hasmonean, a Maccabee, takes the role of high priest in Jerusalem. And that happens in 152 BC. Jonathan Apphus is appointed high priest, though he is not a descendant of Zadok. Now, who is Zadok? He was the high priest during the days of King David. Zadok is the descendant of Aaron, the first high priest. And from the days of Zadok and King David, every high priest in Jerusalem had to be the firstborn son of the firstborn son of the descendants of Zadok. For the first time, a different family takes the high priest role. And that's what he is known for. The Hasmoneans were not from the house of Zadok, and as we'll see in just a moment, they soon announced themselves as king of Israel. And they're not from the house of David. So this really upsets Orthodox Jews called the Hasidim. And even today, if you see the Jews with the long curls, on their cheeks, the hair that comes down, they're called Hasidic Jews. These are Orthodox Jews. And from the Hasidic Jews, you have different branches, like the Pharisees and the Essenes, which we'll talk in just a moment. And they're furious with the Hasmoneans because they've anointed themselves high priest and king, and they're not from the right house. Okay? So after Jonathan Apphus, and by the way, you say, why is he called Jonathan Apphus? Well, Apphus means the diplomat. He's called Jonathan Apphus because he's the diplomat, and he becomes the high priest. After Jonathan Apphus dies in 143, Simon Thasi, he's a Maccabean, he's a Hasmonean, but Thasi means the wise. He's called Simon the Wise. He comes to the throne from 143 to 135, and it's during his time that Judea throws off all of the Greeks completely out of the country. They stop paying taxes. He is beloved because of that. The kingdom expands because of him. Now, let me say something about surnames, something that I want you to hang on to. Your surname is your last name. For instance, my name is Burleson. That's my surname. That's my family name. That's my name of ancestry. My first name is Wade. You must understand that in Bible days, Old Testament days, you didn't have surnames. You didn't have last names. You had first name, given name, and then typically it would be son of, then your father would be named. Okay? Surnames only come into existence around this time, between the Testaments. And your surnames would come either because of your occupation, what you did. For example, if you're a miller, we have a James Miller. Miller is an occupation. It's barrel making. Cooper, same thing. Location, your surname could be from your location. For instance, we've got James Hill. More than likely, his ancestors lived on a hill. That's a location. Then you have relationship. By the way, that's me, son, Burla's son. Son of Burley. You say, what's a Burley? A Burley is someone who pulls knots out of burlap sacks. I'm a son of a Burley man. Burla's son. And by the way, I'm still pulling knots out of people and so on. Okay, so this is the rise of surnames. Are you with me? So when we say Hasmonean dynasty, we're talking about Mattathias, son of Hasmon. His surname became Hasmonean from the ancestry of the Hasmonean people, from Hasmon. Okay, so it's a lot of fun, but that's why You've got Simon Thasi. You say, why isn't he called Simon Maccabeus? Well, he's called Simon Thasi because he took the name the Wise One. Make sense? So that's where it can get confusing. But I'll show you a chart here in just a moment to show you how all the Hasmonean family are related to each other. In 142 BC, as already mentioned, during the leadership of Simon, there we go, Maccabees or Hasmon or the Wise, the last surviving of the five sons of Mattathias, the Seleucid soldiers pull out of Judea and Antioch and stop taxing the Jews. Independence had come, and Simon served as the high priest of Jerusalem, of Judea. He's called high priest, ruler, and ethnarch. Then he dies. In fact, he's murdered. Do you know where Simon the Wise is murdered? He's only reigned for 7 years as high priest. He's the last surviving son of Mattathias. He's murdered in Jericho. And do you know who kills him? His son-in-law. And do you know why his son-in-law kills him? Because he's upset. That is correct. He's upset that his father-in-law is not from the house of Zadok and not a true high priest. And he's afraid that his brother-in-laws are going to be appointed high priest, so he murders him. Don't have time for it. But that is basically the end of the Maccabean revolt. Because when Simon dies, his son does come to the throne. John Hyrcanus. And when I say come to the throne, he becomes ruler. He becomes high priest from 135 to 104. And it is John Hyrcanus, Simon's son, who leads Judea in the Golden Age. By the way, I'm showing you coins here. There are still coins that you can buy. I just got one in that is a coin of John Hyrcanus. And it was only like $100. These are ancient coins that are minted in the days that these Hasmonean rulers ruled. This is the Golden Age of Judea. Let me show you what I mean. This slide on the left here, this little sketch, the black here in the middle, that is the size of Judea during Persian rule. Under John Hyrcanus, and by the way, he got his name Hyrcanus because of a battle in the city of Hyrcanus, which he led the Jews in victory of. Okay? This is the territory of Judea under his rulership, John Hyrcanus. It's the golden age of growth for Judea. You're moving from a province under Persian rule and Greek rule into an independent state that is almost getting back to the borders of the old kingdom of Israel and the old kingdom of Judah. And this is that time period between the Testaments. Let me tell you two things about John Hyrcanus, the son of Simon the Wise, who was the son of Mattathias, that you need to remember. As John Hyrcanus leaves Jerusalem with Jewish soldiers to go conquer neighboring territories, he moves south to a little place called Idumea. Idumea is the Greek name for Edom. It's where the Edomites lived. Who are the Edomites? The Edomites are the descendants of Esau. You read about them in the book of Genesis. The Edomites have lived there for centuries. John Hyrcanus takes his Jewish soldiers to Idumea, to Edom. And he pulls out his sword, and this is what he says. You either convert to the worship of Yahweh, circumcise your sons, and become Jews, or we will kill you. And guess what? That's what they do. The Idumeans, who are Edomites, with an Arab heritage, convert. Now, this is important. Because Herod, who is king of the Jews, when Jesus is born, Herod is an Idumean. His grandfather was forcibly converted to Judaism. And in fact, his father is Antipater. Who was the son of his grandfather, who was forcibly converted under John Hyrcanus, and King Herod the Great is Idumean. Now, this is the beginning of how Herod worms his way into the kingship of Judea. forcibly converted by the Jews. And he's not Jewish. He's only Jewish by religion because he's converted. This happens during the days of John Hyrcanus. When John Hyrcanus dies, his son, by the name of Aristobulus, in 104 BC, and this is an important date, Aristobulus, for the first time, says, okay, high priest isn't enough. Nope, nope. I am now king of the Jews and high priest. By the way, this little drawing here on Aristobulus, he only reigned for a year. He died of a mysterious illness, of an internal something that killed him. Notice here, he's got his high priest vestments on and he's got a crown. Here you have the embodiment of the house of David, the kingship of Israel. There has not been a king since Zedekiah had his eyes poked out by Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC. And the last thing Zedekiah, king of Judea, saw was his sons being murdered. And then he was taken by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon. There hasn't been a king of Judea from that time, 586, until 104 BC, when Aristobulus anoints himself king of the Jews. And this is the beginning of five kings and one queen for the Jews between the Testaments. It's called the Hasmonean dynasty, the kingship of the Hasmoneans. Now, you say, why is this important? Well, from Aristobulus to Herod to Jesus, what you've got to understand is there's a fight in Judea over who's going to be king. You've got Aristobulus saying, I am king, and I am high priest. And you've got the Pharisees and the Essenes and the other Hasidic Jews saying, you're a fraud. And it becomes almost a civil war, as you'll see in just a moment. And then, of course, King Herod takes advantage of this by going to Rome to be appointed king of the Jews himself, as I'll explain in a moment. So when Jesus comes along, oh my word, he's a radical. He's king. So tell me, are you king of the Jews? See, you never understand why the title king of the Jews is important, why the high priest of Jerusalem is important, why Jesus is called our high priest and he's king of kings. Until you know the internal conflict in Judea 100 years before he comes. And also it gives new and deeper meaning to these early Christians who would be very familiar with Jewish civil wars. When Peter writes to followers of Jesus, you are a chosen people. You are a royal priesthood. You are a holy nation. You are a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. It just gives you a better sense of why Peter would write that. Because he's writing to people who are not unfamiliar with civil war. Now, the 12 Hasmoneans, after King Aristobulus, after he dies a year, it gets really bad now. Because his brother, Alexander Janaeus, takes the throne and marries the widow of King Aristobulus. Her name is Salome, or Salome Alexandra. Salome Alexandra, that we'll talk about in just a moment. Alexander Janaeus marries her. Okay? And he is king from 103 to 76 BC. Now we're entering into part two, and I want to tell you just a few stories of these latter kings and one queen of the Hasmonean dynasty, and where Herod comes from. King Alexander Janaeus, the brother of Aristobulus, he married Aristobulus's wife. And here's what he's known for. The Hasidic Jews are so terribly upset that Aristobulus and his brother have made themselves king and high priest, embodied in one man, that they revolt. And Alexander Janaeus takes
600 Pharisees and crucifies them in Jerusalem and then kills their families as they die on the cross. Now, you say, oh, for heaven's sake. Yep, it's a bad, bad time.
In fact, it's so bad that what happens is that another group of Hasidic Jews, the Essenes, they flee Jerusalem under Alexander Jannaeus. They flee 13 miles south to the desert, and they establish a community of the Essenes in a place that we call Qumran. And let me tell you what the Essenes did. They were so upset with what was happening in Jerusalem and what they were seeing with the Pharisees being killed and Jannaeus crowning himself king and high priest, that many of them, it is believed, took treasures from the temple that no Hasmonean, no Maccabee, no fraud, no imposter should ever have, and took them south and of Jerusalem, 13 miles, and buried them in the desert. And then they built their community at Qumran using a map of the temple in Jerusalem. This is where the Dead Sea Scrolls are written. It is in Qumran during this time that the Dead Sea Scrolls are written. Because the Essenes are wanting to keep pure the Jewish faith. So they make copies of the older scrolls, and then they write new scrolls. And we had a gentleman here not too long ago called Jim Barfield, who's an expert on one of the scrolls that was found at Qumran in 1948. It's called the Copper Scroll. And he believes, and I frankly, the more I learn about it, the more I agree with Jim Barfield, who's from Oklahoma. He believes that the Copper Scroll is a map to buried treasure, to the places that the instruments of the temple were hidden by the Essenes to get them away from the imposter Jannaeus, Alexander Jannaeus. Now, here's what's interesting about Alexander, who, again, was the brother of Aristobulus and crowned himself king and high priest. When he went out to do some of the festivals, with all, you know what the festivals are, the seven major festivals where the high priest had to lead and so on. When he would do water libations or water offerings during one of the festivals, he didn't know how to do it. And so the Jewish people began throwing citrons at him. You don't even know what you're doing. Now, you've got to understand something. This is a military family who led the Jews to a revolt of the Greeks, who have no experience in high priesthood and kingship, who have basically taken the throne. Now, at the Dead Sea, at Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found by the Essenes, it's really amazing. It's an amazing trip. If you ever get a chance to go to Israel, you need to go with us. In fact, Rochelle and I were talking. We are looking at going again in 2021. And we're looking at a different time. We may even go in the fall because our guide said that that's the best weather and the fewest crowds. So we may go in 2021. If you have an interest, we'll tell you more about it. I've got a handout, yellow. We don't have time to go over it. That gives you some great facts about the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found in 1948 at Qumran, where the Essenes fled from Jerusalem, basically for their lives. Okay, when Jannaeus dies in 76 BC, his wife, the widow of Aristobulus, and now the widow of Alexander Jannaeus, his wife takes the throne. Now she knows Salome Alexandra. She knows she can't be high priest. So she appoints her son that she had with Jannaeus and named him Hyrcanus II. She appoints him high priest. And then she takes the throne. A great New York Times bestseller was written about her, Jerusalem's Queen. It's a fictional account. It's a novel of Salome Alexandra. But here's the thing. She only reigned for about 6 years. She's the only the second queen to ever reign in Judea. No other queen. Who is the only other queen of Judah or Judea? It's Atalia. 768 years prior to Salome Alexandra, Queen Atalia. You read about her in the Old Testament. Don't have time to tell you her story. She was a wicked woman. She was a Baal worshiper. She's the only other queen of Judea. Salome Alexandra, or Salome Alexandra, she was beloved much more than Atalia. And she was not nearly as bad as her second husband was. When she dies, the reason you should know about her is because of her two boys. And I've got a chart right here, and it's also in your notes. Here you've got Mattathias. Then three of his five boys end up being high priest and rule over Judea. Then John Hyrcanus becomes the leader. And then he has, if you will, Aristobulus, who marries Salome Alexandra. And then he dies, Aristobulus, and she marries his brother, Janaeus. And then she has two sons with Janaeus, Hyrcanus the second and Aristobulus the second. Now, the reason that you need to understand these two guys is because here comes the Romans. They fight. These two brothers fight over who's going to be king. Hyrcanus the second had been appointed high priest by his mom. And so when she dies of old age, she was an old woman by this time, he's going to be king. He's the oldest son, Hyrcanus II. But his younger brother, Aristobulus II, he wants it, and he wants it bad. So they fight. Hyrcanus II is king for less than a year, and they fight each other, and Aristobulus wins. And he says to his brother, listen, I'll let you live, but you need to get out. So Hyrcanus II, deposed by his brother Aristobulus II, he flees Jerusalem, no longer king, and he goes to Idumea, to Edom. You remember Idumea? John Hyrcanus I, when he expanded Judea under his reign, what did he do? He forcibly converted the Edomites to Judaism. When Hyrcanus II flees south to Edom, he lives in a place called Petra. And Petra, if you don't know where Petra is, if you've seen the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark at the last scene, you know, the horse coming by, that's at Petra. This is where John Hyrcanus II lives. And do you know who his best friend becomes? Antipater, the father of Herod. In fact, they develop a bond at Petra. And in 63 B.C., in Judea, you've got Aristobulus II, who is reigning on the throne. And there's a general from Rome who is moving east, conquering countries. His name is Pompey. And he hears about this conflict between two brothers, how the older brother, who should be king of Judea, has had to flee because his younger brother, Aristobulus II, made him go to become king himself. And here's what Pompey thinks. What? What in the world are they fighting over? There must be some wealth and some riches in Jerusalem. Why would brothers fight to be king? So Pompey takes his army into Jerusalem in 63 BC. And his army walks right smack dab onto the Temple Mount. And his army enters the temple. In fact, General Pompey walks into the temple just like Antiochus Epiphanes did 100 years earlier. And it's from that moment in 63 BC when General Pompey, who is the son-in-law of Julius Caesar, walks into the temple in Jerusalem, that the Jews begin to hate the Romans. You know what Pompey does? Pompey says to Aristobulus, "Hey, I don't like you. In fact, I like your brother." So the Romans called Hyrcanus back from Petra and said, we're arresting your brother Aristobulus and his son. We're sending them back to Rome as prisoners. And Hyrcanus, we want you to be high priest. And you can call yourself king, but you're going to be a vassal king. You're going to report to us. This is now our land. The Romans take over in 63 BC. Hyrcanus comes back from Petra. And you know who comes with him? Antipater, the Idumean, the father of Herod. And Herod now becomes the procurator under Hyrcanus II, the procurator of Judea. Now, he's not Jewish. He's Idumean. He's only Jewish by forced conversion. And he's got two boys, Phocel and Herod. And he says to Phocel, "Phocel, you're going to be the military prefect over Judea. And Herod, you need to go up north to Galilee, and you're going to be in charge of the military up there." And so Herod's first appearance in Judea is as a military prefect in Galilee. And that's under Hyrcanus II. Now, here's what's fascinating. Antipater is the right-hand man to Hyrcanus II, who is the son of Alexandra, the queen, who was the wife of Aristobulus I, who was the son of Simon, who was the son of Mattathias. These are all Hasmoneans and Maccabees. And Hyrcanus II is now on the throne because the Romans have put him there and taken his brother to Rome. Well, Julius Caesar, and I don't have time to tell you a lot about this because this is our next lesson and the next one. Julius Caesar is basically leading the Roman Republic. And he hears that there's a new enemy that is rising in the east called Parthia. And what happens is the Parthian Empire comes to power. Now, let me tell you who the Parthians are. Do you remember the old Persian Empire that was conquered by the Greeks? Well, when the Seleucids began fighting the Ptolemies, the Seleucids' attention was drawn to the west. And those old Persians, they just wouldn't die. They come back, and they're now called the Parthians, and they begin moving west again. And they meet Rome. And Julius Caesar is like, whoa, we're going to have to do something about that. Those old nasty Persians. So he takes his army to fight the Parthian Empire. But here's what happens. Before he gets there, the Parthians remove Hyrcanus II, who had been put there by the Romans. And do you know who they put on the throne? It's in your handout. Antigonus. Do you know who he is? He's the son of King Aristobulus II, who'd been taken to Rome. Aristobulus II and his son Antigonus escaped. And Antigonus makes an agreement with the Persians that if you will make me high priest and get rid of my uncle, Hyrcanus II, I'll give Judea to you. Well, that's exactly what happened. And Herod, remember he's the military governor for the Romans? Under his father, who's the procurator of Judea for the Romans? Herod hears about this agreement, knows that the Parthians are coming, and knows that he's in trouble. So he takes his wife and his children, and he moves south to a place called Masada. And there, Herod hides his family from the Parthians. And then they stay there for 3 years, his family does. He gets on a boat, Herod does, and he goes to Rome. He arrives in Rome in 40 BC, and he goes to the Roman Senate. And he appeals to them and says, "Look, you've got a problem. The Parthians are coming, and they've overtaken Judea. You make me king of the Jews. I will take an army of Romans back, and I'll defeat the Parthians, and I'll be king of the Jews, and I'll rule Judea for you." The Roman Senate agreed, And do you know why they agreed? I'll tell you a fascinating story, just give you the highlights, because we're going to talk about it in depth in 3 weeks when we come and talk about Herod and Antony and Cleopatra. Let me tell you what happened. When Julius Caesar came, he had a revolt. Pompey had revolted against him. Remember the guy that walked into the temple? That was his son-in-law. His own son-in-law turned against Caesar, became his enemy. So Julius Caesar came to fight the Parthians and to quell the rebellion of his son, Pompey. And he finds out when he comes that the Ptolemies in Egypt, who are still there, the Ptolemies, the Greeks, Pompey had come to them to hide. And they actually killed him, the Greeks did. And when Caesar showed up in Alexandria, they delivered his son-in-law's head to him. And Julius Caesar was really upset with Ptolemy, the king of Egypt. And he says, why'd you do that? Well, we thought he was your enemy. We thought you'd be happy. And Caesar says, no, I'm not. I'll deal with that myself. You've killed my own family member. And guess what happened? Through the fracas between Julius Caesar and Alexandria and the Greeks, the Ptolemies who were there, while the Parthians are overtaking the old Seleucid Empire and Judea, the Ptolemies come after Caesar. It is called the Siege of Alexandria. And the Ptolemies are going to kill Julius Caesar, who is the last leader of the Roman Senate, the last leader of the Roman Republic. And you know what? He's going to die. He's going to die because his troops aren't there yet. But Julius Caesar is rescued. And do you know who rescues Julius Caesar in Alexandria, Egypt? Antipater, the father of Herod, sends some soldiers down to rescue Julius Caesar. Just a few years later, just a couple of years later, Julius Caesar is assassinated. The Parthians have taken Judea. King Herod comes before the Senate, and the Senate now reveres Caesar. They believe he was wrongly assassinated. And here comes the son of the man who rescued the last leader of the Roman Republic, Julius Caesar. And he says, I'll help you. You give me an army. I'll defeat the Parthians. You make me king of the Jews. And lo and behold, that is exactly what they did. They made King Herod king of the Jews. And he takes the Roman army and he marches back to Judea. The Parthians are in charge. Antigonus is the high priest. And the siege of Jerusalem occurs in 37 BC. And King Herod the Great defeats the Parthians. And he enters Jerusalem to the Temple Mount, pronounces himself as King of the Jews. And then King Herod the Great begins a rebuilding program of Judea. Do you know why? He wants the Jews to like him. So he rebuilds Jerusalem. He rebuilds the temple. He builds a city in honor of Caesar, Octavian Caesar. We'll talk about Octavius next time. He builds a Caesar called Caesarea by the sea, builds a city for him. He builds Caesarea Philippi. I mean, all kinds of building projects. He does incredible things in terms of the structure of Judea because he's buying the fidelity of the Jews because he isn't one. And of course, he is the king when Jesus is born. When the wise men come from the east, Parthia, Babylon, who've been studied and scholared in the school of Daniel, asking the question, where is he who is born king of the Jews? This man who has fought his whole life to be king of the Jews is ticked off. The Messiah is born in the 35th year of the reign of King Herod the Great. King Herod, when he hears the wise men, according to the Gospels, he says to them, where is he to be born? And they respond to King Herod the Great, in Bethlehem of Judea, for as it is written, and thou Bethlehem in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. And these were basically scholars, not the wise men, that told Herod that. And then he calls the wise men back and he says, listen, My scholars have told me that the King of the Jews is to be born in Bethlehem of Judea. So go. When you find him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him as well. And then he sent out a secret order that all of the Jewish boys, 2 years and under, were to be drowned, lest the King of the Jews arise. This is how we get to the coming of the Messiah. Next time we come together, we'll talk about the rise of the Roman Republic, a little bit more about Julius Caesar, and how they make their way to the east. I realize some of this is repetitive for you, but I think saying it again and again and again helps you get in your mind exactly how the New Testament opens and why Jesus being King of the Jews was such a radical concept in the Gospels. Okay, you did well. It's a great crowd. Remember, some of you look like a deer with, you know, headlights. So. Okay. Next week, we have fall break. The following week, the Roman Republic. The following week after that, King Herod, Cleopatra, Mark Antony. Fascinating story. One of the things I didn't tell you tonight that we'll talk about more when we get to Herod and Cleopatra, you remember when Antipater saved Julius Caesar, the siege of Alexandria just a few years before Caesar was assassinated in Rome? When he was saved by Antipater, the Romans forever loved Antipater and his family, including Herod. And after he was saved, and the Ptolemies who tried to kill Caesar were punished, the Romans handed the throne to Cleopatra the VII. And Cleopatra became the last queen of the Ptolemies. And Julius Caesar, in celebration of his life being saved, took a cruise down the Nile with Cleopatra. And she became pregnant with Caesar's son named Caesaron. And, you know, all these people are absolutely intertwined with the stories that are in the Gospels. And I hope the next 2 weeks, things will begin to make even more sense to you through our look at the Roman Republic and Antony, Herod, Cleopatra, and Caesar. We got a minute and a half for one question. Yes, sir, Jerry. Who else? William asked me that. Let me give you an update on James Barfield. James Barfield went back after he was with us to Qumran, had all the permits to dig with a member of the Knesset, and they began their dig again when the Jewish Antiquities branch of the Israeli government came and stopped them, marked off everything around Qumran, and basically said, no foreigner will dig on Israeli property. And according to James Barfield, I made contact because William asked the same thing. He believes that his presentations have been convincing to the Israeli government and that they are greatly concerned that somebody other than a Jew will find what is buried at Qumran. So according to James Barfield, the Israeli government is beginning their own official dig using the information from the Copper Scroll looking for the ancient artifacts from the temple. Of course, who knows if that's true or not? You know, the fact of the matter is after Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple in 586 BC, we have no written record of where the Ark of the Covenant was taken. The Ethiopians say it was taken to Ethiopia. Others say it's buried under the Jerusalem temple. James Barfield believes that there was a guard among ancient Jews, among the Hasidim, among the Orthodox, that they guarded it, and that it was secreted away because you couldn't have it unless you practice temple rituals. And because there were all kinds of problems in the days of Ezra, Nehemiah, and so on, with the temple and foreigners, and we're studying that on Tuesday morning, it was maintained under guard and never brought out to the temple. And then by the time of the Hasmoneans, the Essenes secretly evacuated all of the stuff that had been hidden down to Qumran, rebuilt the temple there, and buried it, waiting for a time that the Messiah would come. That's Barfield's belief. Who knows? Who knows? But I will say this. The Hasidim today, they are looking for everything. And they are raising the red heifers, and they are raising everything needed to reestablish temple worship. It's called the Temple Institute. And if there's another war in Israel, I guarantee you, the Temple Mount will never be given back as it was in 67. And some will say, will they reinstitute Jewish religion? I think they will. The only question, Tim, for us is, would we say it is of God? Or would we just say it's of the nation? I personally say it's of the nation. It would be like the Hasmonean dynasty. They would be doing it as a religion. And I would have no problem with that because I believe in freedom of religion. I'm just not of the opinion that God would ever want us to go back to kiss the picture when the reality that the picture represents has already come. My dad said to me, I'm going to compliment you and we'll be done. My dad preaches all over the place and he says, you know, Wayne, he said, there's something different about teaching at Emmanuel. He said, I go to these churches and nobody has any understanding of the Bible. He said, I come to Emmanuel and it's like, oh my word, people understand the Bible. I said, well, Dad, that's because I go blind studying for Wednesday night. God bless you. You're dismissed.